Mr. Eagle's real three.
That knife, I think it was the 21st or 22nd of April. Corporal Cook, Father Wanton, and myself went on a listening patrol on the banks of the Indian River, just down below A Company. A Company was right on there, just above Castle Hill and surrounding.
Were you still a member of Headquarter Company?
Well, I was, yes. Yes, although it wasn't usually our job, because everyone had been on a 25-mile brigade soiree out into no man's land, everybody had been used. So the idea was to give somebody a rest, I suppose. And so us three were chosen to go on this listening patrol, which was far from normal, because I think it was about 10 o'clock at night, there was some movement on the far side of the river. So I said to Scouse, the hunter who was in Liverpool, Scouse, I think there's somebody over there. So he said, yes, so we told Corporal Cook. And we had a telephone back to Captain Farhockley. So he told him, he says, so Farhockley got the artillery to send over the flares, you see. So they went up and we could see them. There were 14 of them. And they were coming along the river opposite towards where we were, which is now known as Cluster Crossing. At that time, it was, as far as we knew, the only load crossing within miles. What we didn't know was later on, but it was found out there's another one just round the bend in the corner, which the Chinese used later to successfully attack our flanks. But at that time, we didn't know, and we were guarding this. Well, we weren't supposed to be there, just a listening patrol to. We just watch and listen and report, you see. So anyway, we got opposite to us, and it looks as if they went across, so we told Captain Farhockley, and he said, wait and see. He said, if they tried to cross, he said, let me know. Anyway, they started to wade across. So he said, well, not to let them across. Although we were listening patrol, which we expected to do. So I don't want them crossing. Finally, they've been told that they were sending out parties to check on our defences. And we got about halfway across, and then they said, right, he said, you can stop them now. So that's what we did. We went for them, wrapped it further. We only had rifles, of course. And anyway, presumably because some were floated down the river and some were dragged back by the comrades. And then they just disappeared. All the far side. Out of sight. And it was all reported, of course, and it's all reported in the Indian law now. But that night, nothing else happened. I tell you, we were on edge.
How many shots did you manage to get away?
I'll say 1, 2, must have been about 20 at that time. With 4 magazines of 5.
Were you a good shot?
Yes, I was a good shot. Well, I think so. Not actually in career. I mean, I met bad shots on during my service. But, some were naturally good, naturalized, some were just couldn't do anything, just couldn't coordinate. And so, could be good soldiers with bad shots. You know. But yes, I used to think I was a good soldier, and I was a good shot. Wasn't perfect shot like some of them.
So then the patrol withdrew?
They withdrew. And the rest of the night was quiet. During the middle of the night, later on, there was a crash just off to our right here. And of course, we were a bit more concerned about that. And it sort of crawled through us, and we crawled off to see if we could see anything. And what happened, there was a small hut with a corrugated roof, and one of those corrugated things had fallen off. We didn't know. We thought somebody creeped up behind us. Well, apart from that, the rest was quite okay, so nothing happened. And then they came and collected us the next morning at dawn, and we went back. That night, Sea Company went out on an ambush, expecting to be more. And there was a couple of hundred of them. And they, in fact, had to Sea Company had to withdraw, soon, Sea Company, because they ran out of ammunition. There was quite a fierce little battle there. We were back in the quarters at that time. And we got all seen by report, of course. Then A Company were particularly severely attacked. And the next day after that, in the morning, daylight came, they were told to withdraw. The major, company commander, had been killed. And Lieutenant Curtis had been killed, there was a couple of officers left. And the company commander, Harry Gallagher, had taken over, taken charge. And they were then told to come back, to retreat back to this. And I'll never forget, we had to go forward, cooks, drummers, drivers, snipers, everybody in headquarters had to go forward and give them cover and fire as they came back, which of course we did. As we were going forward, I forget this, Roy Ritchie was a signaller. Of course, they were shooting at us as well. And suddenly he said, "Open it." Bastard's got me, says. And Aaron got to Paddy Field, and it was like a ledge. We laid down and I said, "Let's have a look." And what had happened was the bullet had actually hit his water bottle, and he thought it was blood. And there was just water bottle trickling down. And when we took a little water bottle, the bullet dropped out. But then we squats were being covered by the artillery companies that came on, and it's a sight that will always stay with me, because they'd had enough. There's no doubt about it. They had an awful long battle, and as they came back, they were just trudging back. They couldn't care about a thing. And there was a small group of four walking on the road, beyond some, walking along, couldn't care. That's what happened. And suddenly, there was an explosion. It was obviously a mortar bomb, see, right in the middle of them. And knocked them all over, and they just got up and walked on. And the only one who was wounded apparently was Lance Corporal Taylor, piece shrapnel in his heel. But that was it. Otherwise, you know, to me, it was a miracle. No one was so serious. Just got on. Just carried on walking back to our lines. And of course, they were given permission. We were then taken off the front, as it were. Then, as the other tons came back, they were all reformed. And during that, we had to retire to 4, 2, 3, 5. And questions that were good for me. My part in fighting was very little. Was because we were an experiment. There were two ridges. We were on one, and A Company, B Company, which it was now, was on another, and C and D Company behind us. At full extent of our fighting was rolling grenades down as they could hear them coming up, climbing up the side of the street where we were at the top. He was taking pins out and rolling it down as we moved. Kept quiet until the other end and just swung down. So Joe Jones and myself, that's what we were doing. And,
do you think it had any effect?
Well, it stopped him for a while, and then you'd hear him coming again, so then roll another grenade down each, you see, and so we run out of grenades, of course. And then we had some time to do. A few of them came up the ridge, and we had to go up and send them back a little bit.
How did you do that?
Well, their rifles and things. That's the only way we could do it. One out of grenades by then. So there was just those were support drums that was here. The A and B company was heavily attacked. Really weren't. We just had a few came along. We fought them off. We had to use bayonets. And
did you personally have to bayonet anybody?
Yes, I did, yes. Yes, not very much. Well, I say no, it's a thought afterwards. At the time it didn't matter. It's the thing you've been taught to do. You did it and enjoyed it. Because you killed somebody, you've got to stop somebody from killing you. I mean, that was, and getting through. And that was all we were concerned with.
Did they run when they saw the bayonet charge?
Yes, they did. Yes, they went back. Yes, most of them. I mean, because, first of all, as we went forward, of course, we were firing our rifles from the hip, and then we'd stop, and perhaps put it to a shoulder and fire, and they were coming forward still, some of them. And then when the front row, where we went in with the bayonets, and they went back. Thankfully, they kept coming as they had done with A and B Company. I'm sure they'd have overrun us. But if they had, they would have been able to get straight into the headquarters.
Who led the charge?
I don't know, as far as I remember. But they had to just said, come on, lads, and then. I don't remember seeing that. But now there was people either side of me, you know. So they were, I couldn't tell you. I presume the old Jones was there. I know it wasn't Palmer was, because he said he wasn't involved in it. I never understood that.
About how many of you were involved in the charge?
Oh, there was only about eight of us, I think. There was a small group of us. I mean, we weren't actually sort of lined up or anything. They just said, come on, let's go, and we saw them and just went. I think Ron Stone was there, Albert Hawkins, young Derek had gone to help me, and a couple of others had gone to C Company, so he was fighting with C Company. Derek Flutt was a cousin of mine by marriage, and so I didn't know what he was doing, but he unfortunately died from his prison war.
How many Chinese did you clear from the ridge?
Only about half a dozen that we actually saw. I think we probably the grenade that previously had probably helped. It was helpful, in fact, I think so. Because it was very steep. I mean, they were coming up, they weren't coming up from the front because that was covered by MB companies as a side. And it was a sort of slope and then a sheer drop which they'd come up. I mean, I only climbed up a little bit, but it was only for as they were called, half a dozen or so. And then they must have killed three or four of them, and they stopped, and no one else came. Those three or four, they must have been. Yes. And in terms of now, we're back into our, well, it wasn't really a trench, it was a hole, because we had nothing to dig with. We'd dug it with our hands in vain, and loosen the stuff with our veins and then scooped it out with our hands. It was just sitting there as well, because once you reached the rock, then there was nothing else you could do. You couldn't go any further than that. So there wasn't much of a tent, I'm afraid. And that was a pattern all the way around, because for everybody, all did the same thing. It was only those who were like the machine guns, the Vickers. They were stationed up on there right from the beginning. That was their position, so they were dug in, but they were the only ones. The Royal Artillery mortars, one century mortar battery, there was a couple of them with us, and others were scattered around the riflemen. I mean, they were fighting with us. But I didn't have any of the. At one time, I expected to. Captain Fire Hockley came and said, come with me. He said, to A and B company. He said, try and shift these chaps off. And I jumped out, and then Tommy said something to him. He said, oh, all right. He said, you stay there. I said, well, I did. I didn't know where you stood, you told. But as I understand it, I didn't see it because it was dark. It was something like that. And apparently he, AD company, had been overrun and they were coming back. And that would have finished us, I think, if we had done that at that stage of it. And he went forward and apparently he was very, very brave. I know that Captain Wilson of the A Company says he was the bravest man here, and he led the charge himself to get reclaim the trenches that were ours, and done it successfully. I mean, he did lots of things. He went from company to company, and then he took over A and B Company, took charge of them. He was awarded DSO, but I don't think there's a man amongst us who wouldn't have said he was one who should have got the VC. We didn't because it to put a car on, obviously. We got it because he commanded us, and he'd done his own job. So he'd fought as well alongside with some of them. So to be present, but we still thought that. If it had not been for Farrah Hockley on quite two occasions, and I'm speaking not from so much from experience, but from what the others of A and B Company and also C and D Company have said, that he should have had a reason. I think everyone there would have said that a man was going to get a VC. He got a DSO, obviously, for DSO. But, what some of those injustices we feel, but it always happens.
What happened after the Bennett charge to you?
After the Bennett charge, we went back to our trenches, our holes, and we never got attacked again from that position. So we were there just occasionally rolling and told what we wanted. Grenades anyway. We didn't have any to throw for the charge before. And in the morning, the major said that we'd been hoping to get a creeping barrage from our artillery to help us out, to help us fight our way out, you see, back by the side of the road. But then, I think it was the early hours, about 6:30, I think someone said, that they said, well, they couldn't, they were under small arms by themselves, they were 25 pounders, so they couldn't give us any help. That, in fact, had to call them out for the guns. And I think it was about 10 o'clock, we were told that we'd been selected to stay and give cover and fire to the rest of them as they went out. And we were staying with the wounded, so we took up our positions in front of them and around the wounded. But we didn't have much spill, and then when everybody came off, the intelligence officer, Henry Cabral, said, come on, what have you got? Well, I had about three rounds, I think. And the others were in a very similar state, you know. So we said, well, what we do is we'll just loose off one here and then move, and then loose off one there, just move around to make them think there are more of us here than there was. And then when we finished what we had left, he said, right, you smash up your rifle. So we took it to pieces and smashed it up. I got my rifle, my bugle, because I was the only one that still had a bugle because I'd taken it down to piece in. And John Major, in fact, had played it in the early hours. The colonel said to him, have you got your bugle with you? And he said, well, yes, I knew I had one. So he said, would you play it? Play anything you like, he said, and fire a retreat. So John Major was a very beautiful bugle, lovely to listen to. And he excelled himself like that. He played. And it stopped the Chinese bugles in the track, because they were always playing bugles. Because of course they had their own calls, which we didn't understand.
What was his name?
Drum Major Boss, Philip Boss. He later on became Mayor of Dover a few years ago. That's fine. But he just stood up, no sitting down in the trench for him to play with. So that was right. Still seem that, didn't it? Feeling a bit of peace, this might be what I was expected. What to play it. On the other hand, he was standing up, so I didn't really mind. It was a bit of, you know, you have two feelings. One was your bugle, you like to be blowing it, and the other one was, you're drawing attention. So
you said you'd broken the rifles, what happened?
We broke up our rifles, and then the idea was to make our own way. There was nothing we could do. We couldn't protect the wounded, and we wouldn't have been able to anyway. Just had to leave them. The MO said that he would stay with them, as a wounded, as did the Padre. The Padre stayed with them. And in fact, I think all the medics stayed behind. Corporal Papworth, who got him in him for his bravery. Stayed, and Tippy Woods, they all stayed, all the medics stayed behind with the wounded. And we then had to make our way back, and I think it was Albert Hawkins, Corporal Cook, and myself, who had just a little group of others had gone up on different roads, and we sort of got down to the bottom of the hill, across the pass and up the other side, and when we got down the other side, we followed the path, so we went to go along this path, and suddenly there was these Chinese in front of us. Nothing we could do. We said, put your hands up, so we put our hands up. And they gave us a little leaflet saying, you will not be ill treated, and if you have any valuables, you're an animal over. But it will be signed for, and then when you get released, you get them back. And in fact, a number of folks did get it. I felt it was back when they were released. I didn't have anything, so it didn't make a difference to them. Well, that was me. Nothing. The bugle I the last, I had a phosphorus bomb, like a grenade left, that was all I had. So I stuck there, took it on to the stuck it in the thing, and still in the trench. I left it. I didn't let wait to see what had happened, just by the way. But since found out that a bugle was found, but not there. There was a bugle found at the bottom of the hill afterwards. And I just found out it got long ago on it. We don't know if it was the same bugle. If it was, the, apart from a few that was pitted in it and a few holes and hadn't destroyed it, as I said, then it just pulled. The phosphorus bomb wouldn't do that necessarily. And there's no guarantee that it stayed with it when I threw it in. Anyway. Just got it in straight.
How were you treated at first?
Well, at first they took us, they joined us up with all the others on the side of the hill. And that was a nice thing too. We were all on the road, the main road to MSR that we'd been fighting to stop them coming along. And others joined us, and then eventually there was a big pile of us. And the CO and Captain Fire Hockley and others, our channels. No, not CO, CO was the time. Captain Fire Hockley was there, Major Wire, and others. And then they lined us all up and said that we'd be taken back to a safe place. And whilst we were all lined up there, it was amazing because there was three fighters came along and flew along just in front of us along the road. And as they did, so they dipped their wings. This was what was all on us and slid. We sort of cheered.
US Air Force.
We'd had support the follow up that morning. They did say we'd gotten up on bombs and things, which was helpful to us. I think we'd have been overwhelmed before if it hadn't been for them. That was a daylight for them. Then we were marched back. We stopped at one spot and they took photographs of us all as prisoners. We were a sorry state, I think. No photo. There had been a drop, I must say this. We had a drop that had been no use at all, it hadn't come anywhere near us. The stuff had just gone off, in fact, Chinese had gone down. But at one stage, when we moved back on up onto 235, that was during the night. In the morning, we did a raiding party to our back to our own trucks to get food and things. And RSM and Sergeant Major Strong, they led us, and we went and took things and came back with it, and then we went back again, and the officers give us cover. But we were actually unmolested, as it happened. I think that did so quickly that the Chinese were a bit flummoxed, because what happened, Mickey Walker, out of the signals,